This is the final whistle on Ocean FM. Tonight, Sligo's Martin Gordon on his Paris Paralympics experience. Peter McFarlane on the rise of hurling in Four Masters Donegal Town. Nando Pineacker on why the time is now to leave Sligo Rovers. And here comes the Women's Senior Club Football Championship in Sligo. We'll hear from all four contenders ahead of the championship throw-in this weekend. Welcome to the programme. This is Austin O'Callaghan and the contact details are the usual 083 3500 530 by WhatsApp or by text. The email address sport@oceanfm.ie and on X you'll find us at Ocean FM Sport. A fourth place finish for swimmer Roisin Nireen this evening in the women's 100 metres breaststroke final at the Paris Paralympics. The Limerick teenager was disappointed at not finishing on the podium, but she's already got a silver and a bronze medal in Paris this week, so she's had a good games. For Sligo paracyclist Martin Gordon, his games finished last Sunday afternoon, and for the second games in a row, a fifth place finish in the men's 1,000 metres time trial, or Kilo as it's known in Paralympic circles. A new Irish record en route to that final as well, along with his tandem rider Owen Mullen. Gordon, who's visually impaired, works as a barrister by day with the Gardaí in Dublin. He's been reflecting with Ocean FM Sport this week on his Paris experience. He's still in the French capital.
My feeling now is similar to what it was on Sunday evening. I'm happy with the performances we put in, happy with the results, and overall happy with everything that we put out there on Sunday. It was a good performance, and it took 3 years to break that Tokyo record, and we did it twice in 2.5 hours. So that is, for us, a massive achievement. National records are hard got because, you know, you're the one setting that standard, and a high standard was set 3 years ago, and you see how long it took to do it again. So it is a massive achievement. And we are very happy with this. You have to be. You'd be something wrong if you weren't.
Well, that's the trick, isn't it? You want to cycle faster than you've ever done before, which you did in elite competition. You can't really ask for too much more than that.
No, look, you always want to go better than you went before. And that time would have been, you know, you would have been higher up on that, the world champs, the last games. But it shows the standard is always going up. You have to chase that standard and bring yourself up to it. Would you be happy with fourth or third? Of course you would. But are you happy with fifth to be in the mix there yet again? Yes, absolutely.
I was unaware until I heard your Mix Zone interview with RTE Sport after the final that you and Owen Mullen had a fall in practice in the run-up to these Paralympics. Can you tell us what happened?
Yeah, it was just one of these freak accidents that can happen on a track. One of the other nation's tandems blew a tyre, and it just so happened to be right in front of us after we finished a short effort. And they came down, and we were left with nowhere to go left or right, so we basically had to go over the top of them, which obviously brought us down. So we had to deal with the aftermath of that. We walked away from it, but it didn't help in our preparations at all. But we still managed to be ready that on the line on Sunday. But it was a day-by-day sort of an approach.
Were you injured?
Yes.
And how does that upset, you know, given that you've been fine-tuning for 3 years towards this particular week, how unsettling was that for you and your partner?
I just couldn't come at a worse time, but it's a case of just keeping the head. You know, the body might have taken a bash, but you keep the head, and you're surrounded by medical experts, physios, and the polyclinic in the village, so you are in the best possible hands if something is to go wrong like that. And you follow the advice of those experts around you, and they're the ones who are there to look after you in all situations. So we just had to just keep calm, and as our coach said, look, you need to dip into those reserves and just be resolute in what we're trying to achieve, and just keep it calm, keep it cool, keep a, you know, a steady head. And that's what we did. We got through each day as it came, and ultimately, like, we went down on Thursday in the pursuit, which isn't our event, the 4 kilometre, and that was our first kind of a tester, really, to see how we would fare. And we got through that, did what we needed to do in the first two laps, and that was enough for us to kind of, you know, give us a bit more confidence. And we knew ultimately at that point that we should be fine for Sunday, but like, and we were happy with how Thursday went, so it gave us great confidence to go into Sunday.
Is that one of your strengths you've developed over the years, Martin, that you're good at dealing with adversity, in inverted commas? You know, little setbacks don't annoy or upset you maybe the way they do some of us mortals watching at home if something like that happens so close to a big event like this.
Well, I think it's more the sports person in me than someone who's dealt with a disability. I think we as athletes have quite the stores of resilience and determination that ultimately pushes us on, that we're a unique breed in that respect. And of course, we're ultra competitive, so we have that kind of that push, that drive, that determination. And it's the week of the games, you're going to find absolutely everything within your reserves and to push yourself on, to try to be there, to be ready. If it was any other week, you'd take more time for rehab and recovery, but that wasn't an option. It was just get through each day as it came and just be ready. And we were, you know, we walked away from that crash. It wasn't a career ending thing or anything like that, but it was all everything in proportion, really.
Can I ask you about Sunday's final? We watch the live pictures here at home, and the camera lingers on each tandem team while they're sitting in their seats waiting to be called up to the track for their turn. And it's interesting to watch the two of you. You're both with your own thoughts. You're not talking. You're sitting there, the two of you, obviously focusing on the job you're about to try and execute. You look very calm and composed on the exterior. Is it like that on the interior?
It has to be. You're going through a process, and everything is keeping yourself completely calm. Because you're going up onto a start line, you have to be completely focused on what you're about to do and not get excited too early. And you save it all for that last beep. And that last beep goes and everything is expressed there. You're not being expressed beforehand. You're not getting excited or jittery. You know what you have to do. You go through your process. You go through your text, yourself, what you need to do. And then you're just sitting back, relaxing. You're focusing on your breathing. And you're just drowning all the noise and all the excitement that's around you. You're drowning all of that out, and you're just completely tunnel vision focused on what you're about to do.
You and Owen Mullen were one of the six finalists for the 1,000 metres time trial, the Kilo, as it's known in the sport. And with two bikes still to go, you were still in the bronze medal position. Is there a tiny part of you hoping that the last two bikes might make an error or a mistake to keep you there?
Of course you are. Of course, that's why else to be there. Bike racing, anything in the world can happen. Until everyone crosses the line, you're in the mix. And of course, you're not wishing anything ill towards your competitors, but you're hoping that maybe they might go that bit slower than us or whatever it might be. But yeah, you're always hoping for a medal when you're in the mix for it. And getting yourself into that position is it's a satisfying place to be, that knowing that you're in amongst us, you're in with the chance here. And some days it goes your way, some days it doesn't. But we put in a huge performance, and we were happy with it. And look, another major championship at that time, you could have had a medal.
And those last two bikes, the British pair and the German pair, when they're in the middle of their ride, are you getting commentary from Owen Mullen, your partner, about how they're doing, or are you someone who just kind of lets it happen and wait to hear what the result is or the time is?
You kind of hear it from your you might hit it from the latter end when you're doing your cool down or whatever else it might be, or if you're finished your media obligations, things like that. But you're not looking for it, you're not kind of seeking it out, but you can hear the commentary all around the arena. So you're on your bike cooling down or whatever it might be. You can't but know what's going on. So, and yeah, you might not be looking to find out, but you do want to know all the same.
Well, you can relax these last couple of days of the Paralympics, Martin, as the Games draw to a close this weekend and Ireland collecting more medals through Katie George Dunleavy, notably. Is there a sense of satisfaction on your part, or do you feel there's still unfinished business for Martin Gordon and the Paralympics?
No, these Games are coming to a conclusion now, and I'm very, very content. Yep, it was that's two games down and two incredible results, great records and set, and yeah, it's been an incredible games. It's been completely different from Tokyo, and we're just enjoying some downtime now in Paris, relaxing and watching our other teammates and their success like Katie too, which is phenomenal. And we get to watch the road races with the cyclists on Friday and other sports as well. I was lucky enough to be in the Stade de France last night for Aura Comerford's bronze medal, which is an incredible experience to be there as a supporter. So it's just been, now it's just a bit of time to relax and enjoy ourselves.
Sligo's Martin Gordon on his Paris Paralympic experience. He's staying on to the weekend to support the remaining Irish competitors, among them Katie George Dunleavy, the girl with the Mount Charles connection. Martin referenced her there. She has one final road race tomorrow lunchtime. Her gold medal win in the time trial this week is her seventh career Paralympics medal, and she hopes her achievements can help inspire future generations of visually impaired athletes.
Yeah, it's brilliant. I think if it gives any inspiration to any visually impaired child out there, I just hope it does, you know, because when I was a child I had no role models to look up to, and I hope there's children out there, visually impairment or even disabled, looking up to us and getting inspired to just believe in themselves and to dream big and achieve anything that they want to achieve in.
Katie George Dunleavy, whose dad John hails from Mount Charles in Donegal, and she and her tandem partner Linda Kelly go in the women's road race tomorrow just after midday, 10 past 12. That event is due to start, 25 bikes in the field. Well, let's stay with the Donegal team. We've known for some time now a bit about Four Masters' rising curve in Gaelic football at underage level, and now at senior football. The senior team have a chance to rubber stamp a place in the knockout stages of the Michael Murphy Sports and Leisure Football Championship this Sunday with a positive result in our draw. But last Saturday, the club's hurling team lifted the Donegal Junior County title thanks to a 3-point win against St Eunan's in Letterkenny in the final, 114-111. It's Four Masters' first adult hurling title for more than two decades. The team manager this year is an Offaly man who's been living in Donegal for the past 15 odd years, Peter McFarlane, who's played club football with Naevalton in Dunkaneely. But hurling's his passion, which is where Four Masters come in. So where has this championship run in hurling for the Donegal Town Club come from?
Okay, probably comes from years of not performing and not getting players out to train and not getting sick of losing and getting sick of being beat. And it comes from a lot of frustration, and it probably comes from realizing that you don't win anything without training, and it's time to start doing that. And when they got the rewards, when they started to put their head down, really.
And did you see a championship run coming from the start of the season, or was it something that evolved once you got up ahead of steam?
I suppose really and truly it evolved and it built. Look, when I went in there first, I hurled with Four Masters when I moved to Donegal about 15 years ago. And I hurled with them for a couple of years on and off. And then the guys were always asking me, would I ever come back and manage, and I played football for Naevalton, and I'm involved with Naevalton. That's my home club, and my kids are playing, and I managed a few teams with Naevalton and helped out a lot of the various people there. And you know, I didn't have the time, and I was enjoying my football. But you know, this year Shane McNulty, the captain, the joint captain of the team, approached me and he said, "Look, would you do it?" And I've been saying no every year for so long that I said, look, I'm going to do it this year. And we went out and I said to Shane, look, I won't commit to anything, Shane, until you get me numbers. And if we have numbers, then we'll give it a go. And in fairness to Shane, he got them out on their Astro pitch in November and they were bumping around maybe 7 or 8. Then they got up to 10. Eventually got up to about 13. And in January, on our first session, I think we had 20 lads there. We built a panel of about 25. And about 20 of them didn't play hurling or didn't play football. So 20 of them only played hurling. 5 of them played football and hurling. That was great. That meant you had big numbers of training to hold it through throughout the year. Because as we all know, in hurling, you can't train without numbers. You just can't train. You can't do anything. So that was something. I said, look, we have something here. We can actually train because we have numbers. And we started off and did the basics, caught them fit, ran the roads. We ran, actually, from the clubhouse, we ran them into Donegal Town and around the Diamond and out to the statue of Big Red Hugh O'Donnell. And we're just trying to get a bit of buzz in the town for the hurlers. And built and built and built. And then we entered the Ulster League and we got to the final there and we built. And then you could see a bit of momentum building. And you know what? The boys wanted it. And when you want something, you'll get it. And fair play to them.
And I'm just wondering how that worked at Tyrconnell Park, Peter. You know, in a season when football at Four Masters is enjoying something of a rejuvenation, given all the talented underage sides that are coming through, several Four Masters lads part of that victorious Abbey Vocational School All-Ireland Colleges winning team, the senior team under Kevin Sinclair going well at championship level. You guys had to navigate your way through a season like that.
Well, we had to navigate, but one of the first men to come over and say hello to me was Kevin Sinclair. And one of the first things he said to me was, it's great to see the hurlers getting together and putting in an effort. And he was one of the most supportive men in the club to me. And, so there was no real, there was no real working against each other. We worked together and, We were very supportive of each other, and us as hurlers understand that football in the club is a serious sport, but the footballers don't discriminate the hurlers, and we work together, and if you don't, you're not going to get anywhere. And it was definitely a happy camp between the footballers and the hurlers, and the hurlers now would like to see the footballers go on now and make big strides into the Senior Football Championship. And we wish them the best of luck.
I was a 1980s kid, Peter, and I suppose growing up, I always grew up with an impression that there were three strong dual counties back in the day. One was Galway, one was Cork, and the other in my mind was Offaly. They were good at hurling, but they were good at football too. You come from Offaly, and I suppose you've been fostered to a degree, or your county has, on that dual sense. Is that a help when you come into a county like Donegal, where you're having to nurture one code along?
My club, Ballinamere in Offaly, we were a dual club, and we were well used to footballers playing football and hurlers playing hurling, and who's with who and who's with what manager wants which, and it was just natural to me growing up. It was hurling and football all the way, and it was supported at underage. Tuesday was hurling, Friday was football. That was just the way it was at underage. And at adult level, you kind of picked which one you were going to play, but you still played both. And the county board, sort of, in dual counties, tried to work around that as well. They tried to work it. It's not easy, but they tried their best. But coming to Donegal, football, it's a football county, and there's nothing wrong with that, and they're a great football county, and hurling's a national sport as well, so it can't be forgotten. And if you just try to publicise or promote your national sport, sure, isn't it great that every boy or girl that wants to play GAA can try something, and if they like it, they like it. But you shouldn't pick one over the other. You should just try everything and see what you're good at. Mickey Hart now coming to Offaly, find that out. He might be looking at a couple of players, and Michael Dignan, our chairman, might say, yeah, sorry, Mickey, they're hurlers.
And I'm just thinking as well, Peter, 2024 has been a season when Donegal have regained the Nicky Rackard Cup at intra-county level. So, you know, you mentioned you're deeply involved on the club scene with Na Bhfuiltean to football-wise, but on the hurling front with Four Masters as well. Are you encouraged by what you see standard-wise around the country, the county?
Oh, you would be. You looked at the three matches on last Saturday, and it's good hurling. And you wouldn't imagine if any of the teams went out to country to play a team, they definitely wouldn't be whitewashed. They can definitely hold their own. You know, if there's any little thing you can improve, is once you start something at a young age, you're going to be better at it when you're older. And you can put any of the hurlers up against a gable wall of the house, and they'd have all the tricks and the flicks. It's about implementing that into a match, and speed. Speed is a big thing. You don't have time to think; you just have to do it. And if it's natural, it happens naturally. So speed is one of the main things that will get you up the leagues and up the divisions in hurling. But all you can do is work with your underage. And I think Eddie Gaffey is doing a great job in for Donegal hurling, because he's starting at a young age, and he's truly selecting, and because he has to, with Donegal born players, and that's only going to help the county, you know, in the future. And it's all about Donegal players for Donegal, or people that are living in Donegal and are established in Donegal. That's what it's all about. But speed of play will get you up the tables, but you can only learn that if you're playing from a young age.
And speaking of a young age, to finish, Peter, I noticed on the Four Masters social media pages this week that some of your players brought the cup, the Junior Hurling Championship title silverware, to underage training at Four Masters, which is a nice touch, and it is about fostering a sense of connection and attachment between the grown-up team with the younger sides.
Ah, sure, it's lovely. Last night, the senior team and myself, we were invited out to bring the cup to the kids, and there must have been about 50 underage hurlers, I think, from academy level up to their under-12 team were out, and it's great to see it. So it was. It's a long time since I've seen that many young lads and young girls playing hurling, because I'm outside of my own county for 15 years, but it was great to see, and I was actually amazed that there were that many young hurlers and footballers out. I couldn't believe it when I seen the amount of them. It was brilliant, actually. And fair play to all of the coaches up there, because without the coaches and without clubs like Four Masters and promoting hurling, you're not going to do well as a county in hurling.
Four Masters hurling manager Peter McFarlane on the county title success last weekend and the rising tide at Tyrconnell Park at underage level. Well, with seven games to go, Sligo Rovers are third in the League of Ireland Premier Division table, but their league run-in in that top division has been complicated this week by news of the departure of defender Nando Pineacker. He's been one of the team's best players this season, but a move to the newly formed Auckland FC in his native New Zealand, the same club Max Mata has signed for, was, Pineacker says, too good an opportunity to turn down.
It's tough when you have a good opportunity. They don't come around every day, so this one was one worth taking. So unfortunately, yeah, that means the time has come to an end at Sligo, but another opportunity, opens up. So I'm glad I'm able to take it, but at the same time, yeah, very sad to be leaving Sligo.
Yeah, as John Russell said in the Rover statement today, that was always the deal with you, that if an offer came up at home and it worked for you, that the club wouldn't stand in your way, and they haven't done. Nando, I remember you colliding with Ed McGuinty at the beginning of this season, breaking ribs. It was a pretty serious injury, and you were sitting impatient, I know, in the stand for a good portion of this season where you weren't able to contribute to Rovers, but then you eventually got fit and got back out onto the pitch, and you looked like a transformed player, because many people would point to your contribution in the heart of the Sligo Rovers defence for, well, one of the key reasons for Rovers' surge up the table this season.
Yes, of course. I don't think it's ever down to one person or one player. But of course, it's always, I'm happy that I can contribute and help the team as much as possible. It's disappointing to obviously get an injury in the first place. And the one I had was obviously a little bit bigger than a normal one. So it took a long time to come back and to get fit again. So, yeah, the whole time, obviously, I'm thinking I can't wait to get back on the pitch and help my teammates and help the club and everyone. So that's basically the goal I had. So luckily, I was able to come back when I did, and we went on a good run of winning I don't know how many games in a row. So that was great that I could help the team. But I think it was down to everyone. I think we came back from the break in really good, yeah, really good form. So that was good, and I'm just happy that I was able to help the club.
What do you put your rich vein of form down to this season, would you say?
I couldn't tell you exactly what it is, but I think we all talked amongst ourselves with the coaches, with the players, to see what we could do, what we could improve on. After the first half of the season, there was obviously stuff that we weren't happy with that we changed, and just to be positive and basically thinking that we could beat any team, which ended up happening over the period when we came back from the break. So, yeah, that was basically what happened.
And yourself and Ollie Denham formed quite the relationship at centre-half in recent months.
Yeah, for sure. I'm going to miss playing with him and playing with the rest of the team, but especially, yeah, with Ed at the back and with playing next to Ollie, yeah, we felt so safe, I guess, at the back. We kept a lot of clean sheets, so I'm definitely going to miss the times playing with them.
And look, Lando, you know, Sligo Rovers fans are a realistic sort. Nobody expected you to stay here forever. You had played in Portugal at a fairly high level prior to coming to Sligo Rovers. You're a New Zealand international. I'm sure you're an ambitious young man. You'd like to think you've got your best years in front of you. We just would like to have held on to you for another 9 or 10 games. I'm sure you can appreciate that.
Yeah, of course. There were a lot of times where clubs were knocking at the door. And for quite a few of those teams, I said no because I believed in the project at Sligo. I still do, but obviously these opportunities come and there's a limited time that you can either accept or say no to them, and then they don't come back. So this was one of those opportunities where we couldn't wait till the end of the season. So like, as sad as I am to go, it is also an opportunity to obviously go up the ladder in terms of the football world or football teams, to go to another level that's maybe a little bit higher than Sligo and push on, because at the end of the day, I think every football player wants to play at the highest level possible or that they can, and this is one of those chances, those opportunities. So, I really want to take it. So, yeah.
How will you look back on your time in Sligo?
I've really enjoyed it. I've been at the club for over two and a half years. I think I came in February of 2021 or 22, I can't even remember now. 22, I think. So yeah, no, I've loved it. Obviously I came on loan initially, and then I enjoyed my first season there. So then I ended up signing a permanent deal, and I've enjoyed it. We've had some amazing nights at the showgrounds. So it's sad that it's come to an end now, but at the same time, yeah, looking forward to the next opportunity.
And finally, without Nando Pijnacker's booming clearances, long diagonal balls or headers off the line, do you think Sligo Rovers still have what it takes to finish in the top 3 or 4 of the league this season?
Yeah, 100%. I was watching the game last night. I picked up a bit of a head knock, so I wasn't able to play. But we played really, really well last night. I think everyone would say we played well, so I definitely think that if we keep playing like we do, like we did yesterday, then we'll, for sure make the top 3 and make Europe, which is the goal at the end of the day, and that, to make the club keep succeeding.
Well, Nando, good luck with your next step on your football journey, and if ever you miss the wind and the rain of the Northwest, feel free to come back to the showgrounds and to Sligo at any time. I'm sure there'll be a New Zealand supporters club of sorts forming in Sligo to keep an eye on your progress in the future.
Yeah, no, thank you very much. Yeah, I'll definitely miss my time in Sligo, but I'm sure I'll be back one day, and I want to say thank you to everyone at the club, the fans, players, everyone that was involved with the club. Just a big thank you from me, and I'll miss you guys.
Nando Pijnacker speaking to us after Sligo Rovers 2-0 win against Waterford last weekend. He's now with Auckland FC, a newly formed club in New Zealand, the same club Max Mata signed for earlier this season, and their new league season down under begins next month. Now, a big weekend ahead in Gaelic football in Donegal and Leitrim as regards the business end of the men's club championships. In Sligo, the LGFA Connacht Gold Women's Senior Championship begins on Sunday morning. Just four clubs contesting the championship this year. Onrua, intermediate winners in 2023, St Mary's, Tour Lestran, and the holders St Nathie's, who've won the last six senior county titles in a row. We've been talking to four players from the four competing clubs. From Onrua, Fiona Feeney. From St Mary's, Emily Nicholson. From Tour Lestran, Molly Kennedy. And from the county champion St Nathie's, their team captain, Hannah Walsh.
Yeah, I suppose we're going for seven, but we're very well aware that the cups are handed back now and it's anyone's game. So, yeah, it can be any of us that are here.
You've had a dartboard on your back for a few seasons now, but you seem to be able to stay standing at the end of the championship. What's the secret?
Yeah, we're very lucky. We have a great group of girls there. And to be honest, I think it's just hard work. Every single one, there's over 50 girls there between the girls and management. I can honestly say it's just hard work is what gets us over the line every year.
And Molly, Tour Lestran, one of the clubs who will be gunning to try and dislodge St Nathie's from their perch. How are Tour Lestran shaping up ahead of this summer's championship?
It's all kind of coming together now, like over the winter and coming into the summer months. Everyone in Sligo were fighting for pitches and places to train. So we're coming back into it now, getting our girls back from the county set up, and we're all starting to come together, I think.
And I'm guessing that includes some very talented minor footballers. Ciara Walsh, the Sligo captain, brought a lot of razzmatazz and silverware to Tour Lestran last weekend. Can you use the glow of that to generate momentum for the senior team?
Well, Ciara is the winning captain, but we've known for years since she came from America when she was underage that she had something special, and we're so lucky that she's with us. But yeah, I suppose her experience from the people she's played and the teams she's played outside of Connacht and all through the All-Ireland series can really, she has that under her belt, and she'll definitely be welcomed back.
I remember Tour Lestran a couple of years ago reaching an All-Ireland club final. So, like, the tools are there in the camp. Is it just about having everybody available to have a right crack at a championship?
Yeah, there's a lot of us. I was on the panel that year as well, but there's a lot of us that are still on that panel that was there in 2018. And we were just incredibly lucky to have that year, even though we did come out with a loss in the end. But like, it was such an experience that you'll never forget. Like,
Emily Nicholson from St Mary's, you have established yourselves now as a challenging senior team. You're quietly building there at Kent Park in recent seasons.
Yeah, we've been there or thereabouts for the past few years. We've new management the past 2 years. So last year came with a lot of learnings, kind of changes. So we're hoping this year we could get over the line.
And it's a group of four, so you're trying to finish in the top two and get to a county final. The equation looks simple enough on paper.
Yeah, exactly. It's going to be less games. So yeah, we need to obviously make the most of every game this time. And hopefully we get straight through to a final.
And I'll bring in Onrua as well. Intermediate champions last year. Which was a pretty special championship run for you guys.
It was, yeah. We were delighted with how intermediate went last year first when we progressed on to Connacht. Not so delighted, but you have that too.
Well, the one thing, Fiona, Onrua have always struck me as a very ambitious club because they have, you know, they have worked their way up the ranks, and I'm sure winning a senior championship is on somebody's ambition list somewhere in West Sligo.
It's on everyone's ambition list, I'd say, in West Sligo anyways. To win a senior title would be some achievement. We had a good run last year, and I suppose now into senior will be tougher, difficult more.
And I know you had a good run of the Connacht Club Championship, narrowly beaten by Ballinamore, Shauna Heslins in the Provincial, if I'm right. And I always remember they still talk about the Onrua game as the making of them to their All-Ireland final run.
Yeah, the Ballinamore, the Shauna Heslins game is a touchy subject for me now. Yeah, it's okay. Still...
You're still getting over that one, are you?
I'm not over it yet, I suppose.
But can you use that experience? I mean, maybe you have to lose a couple to win a couple. Can that galvanise Onrua that it adds to your experience list now?
Oh, absolutely. Look, we'll take a lot from that game last year. We have a lot of mistakes. We have a lot of things to learn, take from that game. It was difficult for us, but I'm sure it will stand to us in senior championship this year.
And just a final talk, girls, on the format of the championship, the four teams. Is that easier, harder? Would you like more variety in terms of the teams you're playing? Or maybe it's the quality's going to be good. The top four senior clubs in the county are going to go hammer and tongs at it. Do Nathies have a view on that?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose at the end of the day, for all of us, I think we can say the more games we have, the better. It's just unfortunate at the minute, the way things are in Sligo, that there is lesser clubs, even in senior, but going down to junior C. But I mean, we all know each other quite well. We know what we're working with. We know what we're against. So just have to make the most of it and go for it.
And does familiarity breed contempt? or not?
Why are you asking me? Familiar, yeah. So I suppose we always are quite familiar with the top teams. St. Mary's seem to always be up against Nathies and Turlestrand in the end, but Onrua are definitely one of the ones that we fear now, and I think it would be a really, really good group, and the games are going to be excellent. They're going to be a really high standard. They're going to be good for the spectators, so I think it's a good thing.
Yeah, and the fact that there has been this underage success, you've all known about it in your own clubs for a few years now, but now there is a national title. Like, does that create a feel-good factor for the senior, more established clubs and players around the place, do you think?
Of course it does. It shows that Sligo is thereabouts. It gives a good standing point for girls to show that what Sligo can do if they put their minds to it.
And whatever happens in the championship, Molly, finally, you'll still talk to one another afterwards, won't you?
Oh God, yeah, I went to school with half an atheist, so we'll have to end up talking to each other all the time, and that's the curse. But anyway, it's all right.
Turlestrand's Molly Kennedy on breaking that curse this coming championship campaign. Before that, Hannah Walsh from St. Nathies, Emily Nicholson from St. Mary's, and Fiona Feeney from Onrua. Sunday morning's round one games are St. Nathies at home to Turlestrand. Onrua play St. Mary's. Both matches throw in at 10:30. On the men's front, after a week off, the Homeland Senior Football Championship resumes this weekend with two Group 1 games on Saturday, two Group 2 games on Sunday. The Saturday games, 5:30 in Oxfield, the holders, Killeara Strandhill, play Cawley St. Joseph's in match 2. Then an hour later in Kent Park in Ballydugan, it's Eastkey against Tubbercurry. That's a live streamed game for Sligo GAA on Saturday evening. Sunday afternoon, we're in Connolly Park in Killooney for the North Sligo Derby. Drumcliff Ross's Point against St. Meloche Gales. It throws in at 2:00. There'll be live coverage of that on the radio and online. And then at 5:00, the action turns to Corran Park in Ballymote for the second live stream game of the weekend. That's St. Mary's against Curry. In Leitrim, the Connacht Gold Senior Men's Football Championship is into the knockout stages. Two quarterfinals in Ballinamore on Saturday. 4:30 will be new commentary on the first of them. St. Mary's against Leitrim Gales is live on Saturday Sportsbeat from 4:30, and that's followed at 6:15 by the meeting of Aughawillan and Fianna St. Caillians. A reminder finally that this programme is available as a podcast each week on oceanfm.ie and wherever you get your podcasts. Simply search for Ocean FM Sport or The Final Whistle to find it. We're back with you next week, same time, same place.